Good morning and welcome to Up to Date. Steve Kraske is away this week. I'm Brian Ellison. Election Day is just 8 days away. Kansas and Missouri will go to the polls for primary elections a week from tomorrow. Several days this week on Up to Date, we'll be looking at issues and candidates facing voters on one side of the state line or the other. Today, it's the Missouri side, and specifically transportation issues, where votes cast next Tuesday could have a significant impact on how people get around Kansas City and the rest of the state, and how much it costs them for years to come. In our second half today, we'll look at a statewide ballot measure that both raises and limits taxes for Missouri roads. But first, we're staying close to home, where the Kansas City streetcar plan faces its biggest public test yet. Joining us to dissect and debate Kansas City's Question A are Steve Glorioso. He's a political consultant working with Connect KC, which is in favor of the streetcar expansion. Steve, welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And also Dan Coffey. He's the founder of Citizens for Responsible Government, a political action committee. They're opposed to Question A and the streetcar expansion. Dan, welcome to you.
Thanks for having us.
Glad you're here. Let's start with the basics. I think folks have heard a lot about the streetcar plan. On the table is a proposal to extend the current line running from River Market to Union Station down Main Street, further south down Main Street, all the way to UMKC, and then east out Independence Avenue and out Linwood Boulevard. Steve Glorioso, what does the vote on Question A next Tuesday do to move the city toward that plan coming to fruition?
Well, of course, we're sitting at UMKC, one of the buildings. Streetcar will come right by this building or very close to it and connect this part of the city to the River Market, all the way to the River Market. The other day I was looking at, I'm not going to sing, God forbid that would happen, but the old song that we know about Kansas City, everything's up to date in Kansas City, a great song. Guy talks about coming to Kansas City, seeing telephones and streetcars. They've been run by gas back there. But anyway, I think this is a chance for the future of Kansas City. We've taken a lot of strides lately to remake Kansas City. We now have, for example, almost 20,000 people living downtown where 10, 15 years ago it was 7. So this is an opportunity to do what almost every one of our peer cities, including I just found out last week, Oklahoma City's installing a streetcar system to move us forward like Denver, St. Louis, and others. It's a chance to redo urban transit, more jobs, and also, as I said, remake Kansas City.
Right. We'll talk about some of the arguments for and against in just a second. But tell me very specifically what the vote on Tuesday does as far as the plan
goes. Thank you.
The whole plan isn't on the ballot, just one particular step along
That's
the way, right?
It's a two-step dance. You start with August 5th, and you vote on just creating the Transportation Development District. I know Dan and I both have maps, but no one can see them. But it just fundamentally expands the district that they're now. It goes out to, again, about 50th or 55th Street to Rockhurst and UMKC. And then on the east to 435. South is the river and, of course, the state line. So you have to take the first step. The issue of taxes being imposed will not come until November. So this is really allowing you the right to vote in November.
Remind us, Dan Coffey, the timeline for the streetcar. If all these votes were approved, how long would it be before there'd be a streetcar extension in Kansas City?
Well, I would guess a couple of years.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you both. What happens if this vote doesn't pass? Is this the end of the whole streetcar plan? Is the plan dead, or are there other paths to get it approved?
Well, I would think that if people look at history, if this vote fails, it will be the fifth or sixth time that Kansas City has voted down a streetcar, and I would hope we would learn something from that.
All right. Well, let's get into some of the
real
arguments.
Quick. We
Go
have
ahead,
turned
Steve.
Down a pretty massive light rail plans, Brian. So this is really an attempt by this mayor and council to do it step by step. We have the downtown district. It would be folded into the second phase, and then our hope is it would be third and fourth phases and reach all parts of the city. But the voters have said repeatedly, as Dan, he said streetcars, but I'm sure he meant light rail, that they didn't want a mat. They weren't willing to eat the whole meal all at one time. And so this is a more conservative, more reasonable, staged approach.
Dan Coffey, did you mean light rail, or do you think voters have actually said no to streetcars?
They're building a light rail system. Sometimes it's presented as a streetcar, but it's basically a light rail system. The construction they're doing downtown is for light rail.
Well, let me get back. Let's take a step back and sort of allow both of you a chance to kind of lay out the basic points of your arguments for and against the question. What we're trying to do here today is help voters make a decision when they go to the polls a week from tomorrow. And of course, it's a particular subsection of Kansas City voters who will be casting votes, yes, to create this taxing district. Let me start with you, Steve. You started to get into this a moment ago. What are the key reasons why you think voters should support Question A?
Well, again, I think Kansas City's finally, after many, many years of being rather stagnant and treading water, is remaking itself as a dynamic Midwest city, not unlike the song I alluded to, Everything's Up to Date in Kansas City. We used to be that type of city, and we have fallen behind. But there have been strides made, both downtown and in the urban core, West Bottoms. We still have very strong suburbs, but we need to continue to build on the urban core. We need to continue to attract everyone, really, but more. I think a lot of the focus is on younger people. I have a stepson who's moved back to Kansas City after 15 years with the Lincoln Prep because he said his great quote was, "Kansas City is getting cool again, and we need that for our future." It's not about, I'll just pick on myself, an old fogey like me. I'm 67, but I see it as something that's futuristic, create jobs and provide good transit.
Dan Coffey, I imagine you're not opposed to jobs or opposed to the coolness of Kansas City, I assume. Why don't you think that this is the way to do it?
Well, it's a tax. It's a tax on the poorest people in the city. If you look at where the TDZ is, the biggest part of it is on the east side. And if you look at some of the people that are going to be taxed there, the charitable organizations, you can go right down Linwood Boulevard, you see the Redemptorist Center, you see the school there, Crystal Ray Academy, you see the Salvation Army, and it goes on and on and on as you move out there. A lot of senior housing in that area there. Crystal Ray, that school, for example, helps 400 poor families a year. If we go to tax them, which we're going to do with this streetcar, now, like Steve says, the initial vote on Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, is for nothing more than to set up the TDD.
And if you and read the taxing development district,
transportation development district.
Yes.
Now, on the ballot, if you read question A, nowhere in there will you see the word streetcar. It's a taxing district that they're trying to set up, and actually, it becomes another political entity that won't ever go away. If it gets set up, it's there for good. But in doing that, they set up taxes for the poorest people in the city. They're going to tax their groceries. They're going to tax their medications. They're going to tax their just about everything they buy. The only exemptions, I believe, are like vehicles, boats, trailers, and utilities. So okay, That's what we're against. We're against taxing the poorest people of the city, Kansas City, Missouri.
I want to invite our listeners to the conversation. And today we're really looking for some good, honest questions from folks who may be undecided about this matter. What do you need to know to make your decision about question A, about streetcars in Kansas City and this particular taxing district? What are your questions or concerns about this question on the ballot? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us. We're at uptodate@kcur.org. Steve Glorioso, you're working with Connect KC. I have to tell you that I have gotten at my home in Midtown more material about this issue than any other issue, mostly from your organization, which I guess is to your credit. One of the things that they almost every one of those pieces of paper says is jobs. This is going to produce jobs. How is creating the streetcar plan going to produce jobs?
Well, just for starters, of course, it's going to create jobs constructed. But the economic development aspects of streetcars is already starting to be proven downtown, where we have, I don't recall the gentleman's name, a developer from Denver who has walked the starter line, which hasn't started yet, it's being constructed, and said, I'm going to pick the spot. I think it was a parking lot. He said, he did buy this. He's going to put in, I don't recall, a hotel or apartment building. There's retail that's going to spring up. This is – Mayor James makes an excellent point, and he's so well suited to do it because he grew up at 43rd and Mongol. This is the first major capital improvements program that anyone can remember that runs east and west in this city. it goes beyond that racial barrier of Troost Avenue, as opposed to everything in the past has almost always gone north and south. The sales tax that people pay, I know this will get into the weeds a bit, but if Amendment A, which you're having on next, passes, three-quarters of that tax will be paid statewide. We will get a huge chunk of money. We'll only have to add another quarter cent in November. And the key to that, Brian, is those taxes exempt food and prescription drugs in addition to utilities. I heard Dan on our previous radio show say that he estimated the tax, I think you used Costco, I'm not sure where, was 13.7%. And I think that's when you work in these exemptions, that's not going to happen.
Talking about the overall sales tax, yes, as it exists now, being increased further would get us up to the 13% range. Is that what you're saying, Dan?
No, sir.
What did you mean?
Here's a ticket. I bought stuff at Costco just recently. The tax is 13.7%. In addition to that, if you shop at a restaurant in that area, there's another 2% tax on top of that. So if this thing goes through, the tax in Midtown Kansas City is going to be about 14.75%.
Okay, but Steve said a minute ago that this is about economic development. It's about creating jobs, not just the construction jobs, but the long-term jobs that come to the area because it's better developed. Doesn't that improve the economy? Doesn't that help these taxpayers who you say are being hit too hard?
Well, I don't know where Steve gets his information, but we have not seen, and I've had several people looking, at a report anywhere in the world that will state that streetcar produces economic development. What produces the economic development along a streetcar line is the tax increment financing and the tax benefits that the city gives to the developers along those lines. As far as I know here in Kansas City, only one developer has said he's going to build a hotel down in the Crossroads Art District with no incentives. Everything else, if you ask those developers, if it was just a streetcar and you didn't get the tax incentives and you didn't get the TIF money, would you build it? And my guess is you're going to get a no for an answer.
Yeah, but let me just ask Dan, I want to make sure I'm understanding you. Are you opposed to the streetcar in general or just to this way of funding it?
I'm opposed mostly for this way in funding it.
Okay.
But Steve? What's really important, in all due respect, Dan, I shop at Costco, and I heard you say that the other day. I have a receipt, and I think you've miscalculated. I can't see your receipt. But the actual receipts, on Saturday, I bought a watermelon, a cantaloupe, and peaches. The entire total tax at Costco was 5.35. The error Dan has made is his receipt, he's adding up two different categories of taxes. If you look, there's an A, that's alcohol, C, that's commodities, and one is 8.35, one is 5.35. And if you add them together, Dan gets a 13.7, but
right.
It's totally bogus.
Well, since we don't have your receipts visible to our listeners, I know, and I will testify for our listeners, both my guests are holding up Costco receipts in our studio. But I think maybe we can step back from the weeds just a little bit to the overall principle at stake, which is that clearly this is going to represent a tax increase, and it's going to affect all people who buy things, not just those who will ride the streetcar. I mean, Steve, another of those advertising points is that this is a benefit for all Kansas Cityans. Mm-hmm. That's maybe lost on some of our listeners. If you live close to Independence Avenue or Linwood or Maine, maybe it is. But how does it really benefit anyone else?
Well, again, you would expect, and I feel very good about our facts. I disagree with Dan on the fact that it doesn't drive, I believe it does drive economic development. But the idea that, and I think people that have lived in the city a long time realize that the idea that we're going to spend over a quarter around, a quarter of a billion dollars east of Troost Avenue to provide transit along Independence Avenue and Linwood, hooking up to the Prospect Max, which is also part of this, and the Troost Max, that comes right by here also, it's for the first time a web of transportation for those who need it most. It's estimated that one-third of the people in the TDD east of Troost don't own automobiles. And you either go ahead, you move forward as a city, or you stagnate. And this is a big leap forward, and I think we'll all benefit from it.
And I guess I'd ask you, Dan, what's wrong with that argument? I mean, Steve is saying this is for the benefit of the whole city. Why shouldn't the whole city, including those who are poorer in the city, pay for it?
First, I'd like to correct something that Steve said. On my receipt, I bought no alcohol. The 8.35% is a city tax, a city sales tax. The additional 5.35% is probably a tax. It doesn't clarify it on her, but I'm guessing it's a tax for the to pay off the bonds and stuff that we gave those developers to control that area.
Okay.
So I have bought no alcohol, and the tax there at that corner was 13.7%.
Well, okay, Dan, you couldn't be more wrong. I gave myself away. My second receipt had alcohol. I bought wine. The 8.3 is also on dry goods. We use an old fashioned term.
All right, guys. I don't think it's helpful to. We can't see the receipts. We're getting into the details that the listeners aren't going to be able to make sense.
What's your question?
My question to you, Dan, is what's wrong with the whole city paying for something that benefits the whole city?
Well, the whole city isn't paying for this. Only people that are paying for this are people that live in the transportation development district, and the people that live in that district also are getting the approval to tax people that live within one-third mile of the line, which, you know, some people don't think that's fair. In other words, if you live within one-third mile of where the trolley line is going or the streetcar line is going, you're going to get a special assessment on your property in that area. And everybody in the TDD is going to be able to vote to whether give you that. In addition to that, the people that are in the downtown TDD that's already been established are going to be able to vote again. And there's no negative, no downside for them. They're already being taxed at the 1%, yet they get to vote to put this tax on the other people.
Yeah, because it would expand. One thing you might have overlooked, the tax will not be imposed, it's very clear, if it were passing in November, August is only a district vote, until there's roughly 50% federal funding. 50% federal funding from the federal government, and what we hope to get after, if Amendment A passes, another $174 million from the state.
And who makes the determination that federal funding level has been?
The federal government.
But who will decide, yes, that is enough funding, this can go forward?
The taxing of either the board or the authority. There's two different bodies that will oversee it. But the feds have already given us directly and indirectly about $37 million for the starter line.
All right. That's Steve Glorioso. He's one of the supporters, works with Connect KC of the streetcar expansion and question A on next week's ballot. Dan Coffey is also with us from the Citizens for Responsible Government. They oppose this measure. 816-235-2888 is the number to call in to Up to Date here on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We are taking your calls with your questions about question A. Let's talk first to Francie calling us from Kansas City, Missouri. Francie, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I live in South Plaza, and many of my neighbors are upset because the map of the TDD seems to jog around to specifically exclude the Walnuts at 51st and Warnell. And we'd like to know why they would be excluded from potential property tax increases when they are among my neighbors who could most afford to pay them.
Well, thank you, Francie, very much for the question. And I think there are lots of folks who look at the list of the taxing district and wonder why some are in and some are out. Steve, you've been working with the supporters. Why are the Walnut Apartments, for example, excluded?
Well, you could find many apartment buildings that you have to, first of all, draw the line somewhere, and there's going to be people on one side of the street that will be in the district and some that won't. The general idea that the city had is that they were drawing the line so that, along with the 1 cent sales tax, by the way, of which a huge majority of sales tax will be paid by people that don't live in the TDD because it includes downtown, the plaza, Westport, et cetera. The idea was to get the district phase two with enough revenue to fund the second expansion and at the same time leave enough revenue and potential benefit to go to phase three. Now, if you put if you overloaded phase two, you would have more money than you would need to fund the system. So you've got to leave property there to be able to advance it further south.
Dan Coffey, is part of the objection to the taxing district the particular buildings that are included?
There's a lot of inconsistencies. For example, I mentioned Linwood and Broadway. That's where the Redemptorist Church is situated. They will pay $4,000 a year in an assessment on their property, $100,000 over the 25-year period. In contrast to that, the new building, the Plaza Vista building, which houses the Pulcinelli Law Firm and the Hotel Sorella.
On the western edge of the plaza.
On the western edge of the plaza, which is in the district also, just like Redemptorist is, will pay $81.45 a year in assessments.
Steve, you're
Now, that's the inconsistencies that show up in the way they've taxed
Dan, in all due respect, again, someone has given you really bad information. The approximate assessment, special assessment on the West Edge building, Posanelli building, will be $155,600. What your people did is look at the 2013 assessment rolls, tax rolls, when the building wasn't finished. Everybody knows the building because it's right across the street from JJ's. Okay, I checked with the assessor this week, and the assessment in 2015, before this starts, is going to be in the neighborhood of $110 million. And based on that, they will be paying $155,600 in special assessment. So as with the tax rate, the opponents are just gross distortions of facts. And I would urge people to do your own study and look these things up.
Dan, one of the other features of this property tax increase will be that if you live within a certain distance of the streetcar line, you individual homeowners will pay more in property taxes. Is that part of your opposition as well?
We're opposed to the way that's set up, the whole financing thing is set up. And to get back to Steve's thing on that building there, I got my $81.40 off of his website, Connect Kansas City website. There's a link on there where you can click on it and get what your assessment is going to be. You click on that property, it will show up $84.
Because you didn't know enough to know that assessment that it's based on was the assessment 2 years ago. The building is now occupied. I've got it from the assessor himself. It will go on the rolls in about 6 months for over $110 million. Okay. And here's the other thing it's only a third of a mile each way. And the reason is it's not a tax per se. It's a special assessment because it'd be not unlike if you wanted to replace your curbs and sidewalks, and the city sometimes will allow you. They'll do it for you, and they will special assess your property.
What's the difference between a tax and a special assessment?
Well, the reason it's only a third of a mile is because, contrary to what our opponents say, economic development housing values are going to go up along the streetcar line like they have elsewhere in the country.
But I mean, I'll
and
pay
so
it the same it, way
you'll
I would
be
pay
paying
a tax.
It because it will improve your neighborhoods. It'll upgrade your public services.
Sure. You pay it the same way you pay a tax.
Yeah, but yes. Okay. But it's slightly different and imposed in a different way.
You got it. Let's talk to Marcia calling us from Kansas City, Missouri. Marcia, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, my comment to Mr. Glorioso is that if the city is so concerned about creating better transportation, why is it that it's only going to be for $500+ million of fixed rail and 7.6 miles total? How can that possibly be a transportation solution for anyone who lives over in the end of the transportation district that they'll be paying higher taxes on over 435 and Gregory? 105 buses could be purchased, natural gas efficient buses, for the same cost of 11 streetcars, and I'll take my his comments offline.
Thank you, Marcia.
Thanks, Marcia.
Well,
Steve,
this is an integrated system.
And more broadly, why the streetcar investment instead of just more buses?
Well, because, again, it has been proven in all of our peer cities in the Midwest, whether it's Minneapolis, Denver, St. Louis, and now, lo and behold, Oklahoma City, have, in the case of the first three, shown that fixed rail streetcars will drive economic development and increase transportation. And, again, to her question about Gregory, the city is doing this step by step. There's been massive light rail programs that have been defeated because they were too big. They went to too many places. People thought that it was too big a leap. And so this is a conservative approach to do it step by step. And it will be integrated with the ATA bus system.
Let me take one more call, actually, before we wrap things up. Let's talk to John in Kansas City, Missouri. John, good morning.
Good morning.
What's your question for our guest today? Go ahead, John.
Yes, I'm wondering how much of our taxpayer dollars has the city spent to date, and where did the money come from, and how has this been authorized?
Okay, good question to kind of give background to this. Do either of my guests know the answer to that question? How much has already been spent on the streetcar?
I have tried to get the answer to that, and it's a comedy, it's a circus to see the answers that I've got from the different people in City Hall. I did do this. I went to the city clerk's website, and I Googled streetcar. A whole bunch of ordinances came up, and I just went back to the first of this year and came up with 20 ordinances that the city councilors have passed in a total of $300 million so far since the first of the year. Some of that money is coming out of the public mass transit funds, the water bond development funds, and places like that that they're taking money from. How much the total is, I hesitate to say. But I can tell you this. In the cities that Steve mentioned where they're building light rail today, I've got a study here, and I'd be glad to send it to you, that shows that the average cost per mile now is up to $109 million. It's not the $60 or $65 that they're telling us. It's $109 million in 13 cities in the United States that are building light rail today.
And very quickly, Steve Glorioso, do you have any idea how much has already been invested in the streetcar plan?
Well, of course, part of that the money that Dan's referring to was for the starter line, and some of it is for the planning for the second stage. So it's been authorized by Mayor James and the council.
Well, I am sorry that we are out of time for this segment. We have a lot of ground we've covered. We've got a lot more that could have been covered. I want to thank my guests, Steve Glorioso, who supports Question A, and Dan Coffey, who opposes it. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Appreciate it very much.
When we come back, we'll talk more about another transportation issue on the ballot, this one for all Missouri voters. Amendment 7 would raise the state sales and use taxes for transportation to pay for Missouri roads and bridges. It's got supporters and opponents across the political spectrum. We'll sort that out when we come back, so stay with us. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. Today, we are looking at transportation issues on the Missouri ballot next Tuesday, and we turn now to Amendment 7. This is a statewide ballot issue, which would raise the state sales tax 0.75 cents on every dollar for 10 years. It would fund transportation needs, roads and bridges, maybe even the Kansas City streetcar, and nothing but transportation. It would also prohibit any increase in the gas tax during that period. Joining us to debate the pros and cons are Jewel Paddock. He's deputy treasurer for Missourians for Safe Transportation and New Jobs. They support Amendment 7. Welcome to you, Jewel.
Good morning.
We're also joined by phone by Jeanette Mott Oxford. She is executive director of the Missouri Association for Social Welfare. They oppose Amendment 7. Jeanette, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Both of our guests are former members of the Missouri House of Representatives as well. So thanks for being with us. Before we get into the pros and cons of the amendment itself, let's see if we can get some clarity about what exactly approving the amendment would do. The ballot asks, should the Missouri Constitution be changed to enact a temporary sales tax of 0.75 cents to be used solely to fund state and local highways, roads, bridges, and transportation projects with priority given to repairing unsafe roads and bridges. Succinctly, Jewel Paddock, what does that mean? What will this money go to fund?
Yes, in Missouri we have, well, if people don't know it, we have one of the largest systems in the country, seventh largest system in the nation. We have sixth largest number of bridges, and unfortunately, many of our infrastructure, or much of our infrastructure, is quite old. The average age of our bridges in Missouri is 46 years old. We have 2,000 bridges in the state that either need to be repaired or replaced. And we have the 45th lowest funding mechanism. So while we have a huge system and lots of needs across the state, and our system's quite in a state of disrepair, we have very little funds to meet those needs.
Jeanette Oxford, your organization opposes Amendment 7. Do you think that that ballot title language is accurate? Has Jewel Paddock summarized accurately what this will accomplish?
We do not like the ballot language, and in fact, we went to court about it. And basically, you can't change ballot language according to a Missouri statute within 6 weeks of an election, and our hearing got delayed by 2 days, and that kind of impacted on our ability to change the ballot language. And we decided to put our effort, instead of appealing, into educating people about what's wrong with it. We're glad you're having this show, because people who just read that ballot language will possibly misunderstand a number of things.
Okay, so tell us what's wrong with it.
Okay. When we say that it's a 0.75 cents increase in sales tax, there's really two taxes that are being raised, the sales tax and the use tax. And folks who read that 0.75 cents may think it's a very small increase, but when you compare it to our current sales and use tax of 4.225%, it's really close to an 18% increase in our sales and use tax. The word temporary may make people think, oh, it'll sunset in a year or two. But it will last for 10 years and automatically go back on the ballot to either be voted up or down after a 10-year period if it's approved. And we think that the language about safety is incredibly vague. House Joint Resolution 68 that put this on the ballot doesn't say anything about what we mean by safety, and we think that was just basically an emotional appeal to try to frighten people into voting yes for this. A fuel tax, which we haven't raised since 1996, is a much more logical way to fund our transportation needs. When you set your fuel tax at a rate that does not adjust for inflation, it's designed to fail, and especially in a state like ours where we have to put things on the ballot to get things increased if we don't put any kind of an inflation adjuster onto something.
Let me stop you there.
Go up very slowly.
I appreciate that. Let me stop you there, Jeanette, and ask Jewel Paddock, our other guest who supports Amendment 7, to speak a little bit to that criticism, because it's a fairly common one. Why would we charge sales tax to the whole state to pay for roads? Why not use a fuel tax for that purpose when this amendment, in fact, will prohibit the creation of fuel taxes across the state?
Well, there are several reasons. First of all, in 2002, Missouri voters rejected a fuel tax increase by 3-1. So if you're looking for a solution to fix Missouri roads and bridges, you need to start with a proposal that Missouri voters would actually support. Secondly, to raise the amount of revenue that Amendment 7 would raise for our roads and bridges, which we desperately need, you need to double the fuel tax by at least 18 cents. So we'd raise the fuel tax to 35 cents a gallon. And that's, you know, going to hurt a lot of people that have to drive to work, to health care every day, and be significantly more cost to folks' pocketbooks on a daily basis than a 3/4 cent sales tax, which we've done, as best we can, have tried to exempt those products that people need to use every day to meet their daily needs.
Jeanette Oxford, you oppose Amendment 7. You said the fuel tax would be a more logical way to support roads. Why is that somehow better for voters? Almost everyone puts gas in their car. Why would this somehow be better?
Certainly, but that's one item, and people with very low incomes can adjust how much they drive, but they can't adjust buying things like laundry detergent, clothing for their kids to go to school. Lots of items will be taxed. And the people at the bottom, the 40% of Missouri households that are non-elderly that have less than $31,000 a year, are already struggling to make it. They often don't have enough money for food. And no, this doesn't put a tax on food, but it does impact your food budget when you have to pay more at the store for, pencils and paper and socks. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of products that will have sales tax on them. The other thing is it really lets off the hook the people that do the greatest amount of damage to our roads, perhaps, the heavy trucks, the long-range truckers, who could be helping to fund our highways by putting money into a fuel tax, are totally let off by this, or practically totally let off. If they stop and buy a pair of socks somewhere, they may be contributing to it just a little bit. But it makes more sense to adjust the fuel tax to stay current in purchasing power. I think that 2002 initiative failed because it was not designed the right way and it was not worked the right way. The fact that we do cover so many miles of highways in Missouri is because of a 1950s fuel tax proposal that did go to a vote it was called the Get Missouri Out of the Mud Project or something like that, where we did take in a whole lot of small gravel, the county kind of roads that maybe it would have been smarter to let counties maintain instead of the state. We have a really large road system here. Adjusting it for fuel tax and deciding what we're going to prioritize, I'm not sure, sure if the amount of money that's being proposed by Mr. Paddock is how much is really needed or whether that's sort of a pie-in-the-sky kind of plan as opposed to meeting our basic needs.
So let me ask you, Jewel Paddock, I mean, the broader question maybe is why shouldn't transportation just be funded through the general budget like everything else? Why shouldn't it compete for the same dollars as education and assistance to low-income people and whatever else is in the state budget?
Well, the primary reason we've never done that is because legislators then decide which roads get fixed. They also decide when the Department of Transportation will get money and when they won't. So when they have a shortfall, they take money from the Department of Transportation and shift it otherwise. I think Missourians are better suited to have a system where the funding goes straight to the Department of Transportation. It can't be diverted for other uses, and that to the extent we allow for new funding, it can only be used for the defined purposes of transportation.
And what about the fact that the state budget was cut for a lot of these other programs just by this most recent legislative session? $600 million or something cut from things like education. Couldn't that money somehow be part of this conversation?
Well, I think if this amendment goes down, I think that's obviously some of the opponents in the legislative route wanted us to use general revenue for this. And, you know, Jeanette's worried about low-income folks and the subsistence that they get and the assistance they get from the state. Certainly, as you start competing roads and bridges against education or health care, that kind of strain is just going to make things worse. So I would suggest we would be better suited to have a transportation sales tax, one that's dedicated to our roads and bridges, ones that will fix them. And, you know, to the extent our opponents say, well, let's just fix it by taxing trucks, well, and raising the gas tax. If you raise the taxes of what it takes to get things to the store and you raise taxes to get to the store, the cost of things are going to go up. It's inevitable. So I just don't understand the logic where we pretend like a gas tax on things getting to the store and a gas tax on getting to the store won't increase cost of goods much higher than a 3/4 cent sales tax.
You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. My guests are Jewel Paddock, who supports Amendment 7, Jeanette Oxford, who opposes it. They're both helping us try to understand this issue and how voters in Missouri should cast their ballots a week from tomorrow. We want to know what you need to know to decide how to vote on Amendment 7. We're looking for honest questions from undecided voters or those who need more information about the ballot issue. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. Maybe you have decided, but for a reason we haven't talked about yet here. Let us know. 816-235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org. Jeanette Oxford, one of the things that we've talked about here so far has been the tax mechanism, but I guess another issue you raised in your early comments was about safety, which has been part of the advertising, actually part of the name of Jewel's organization, Missourians for Safe Transportation and New Jobs. What's your concern with this ballot's campaign language about safety?
Well, one thing, the Missouri statutes say that language should be impartial and shouldn't, basically try to get voters to go one way or another. We think when you put an issue of safety into the ballot language, it creates an emotional squeeze on people. And House Joint Resolution didn't say how we define safety, what we'll prioritize for safety. So it's an incredibly vague promise with an emotional appeal on it. We also think that the meetings in various locales that have gone on to talk about projects have been done in a way that basically, you know, tries to say there's a chicken in every pot for everybody if you'll just vote for this thing. And a lot of that wasn't really about safety so much as what might be a popular local project that doesn't really have a safety dimension. So the promises of safety here are incredibly vague. I think a better way to go would be to modernize the fuel tax but create a rebate for the low-income households. A few states do that, and that would be a better system to offset the regressivity of a fuel tax, but have a user fee that does connect to what it's actually producing.
A lot of the advertising for Amendment 7 has focused on the safety issue. In fact, let's listen to just a little bit of the TV commercial that's getting a lot of play here on local Kansas City television.
On August 5th, we have a chance to give our highways and bridges the major repairs that they need.
And to ensure that every dollar
raised is used on transportation projects by law.
On August 5th, we have a chance to fix what's broken again.
By voting yes on Amendment 7.
Vote yes.
Vote yes.
Vote yes on Amendment 7.
I'm voting yes on Amendment 7.
To fix our roads
and keep Missouri families safe.
And two of the three speakers in that ad are shown as, or says they are paramedics. What in the world does a transportation tax have to do with keeping Missouri families safe, Jewel Paddock?
Well, unfortunately, Missourian is still well above the national average on the number of fatalities on our highways and bridges. And it's just a reflection of the unsafe conditions we have. If you drive every day on roads that don't have the guard cables down the middle of them, if you drive on roads that don't have simple measures like rumble strips on the sides or shoulders. In fact, we have 20,000 miles, if you can believe it, of roads in the state of Missouri that don't have shoulders. It leads inevitably to crossover deaths. It leads to overcorrecting when someone slips off on the shoulder. And that isn't I'm not making these statistics up. Those are lives that are endangered every day because we're not doing a good enough job in the state. And it's only because we don't have the funding. It's not that we don't know how to fix the roads and bridges. We simply don't have the funding to enhance them with the safety measures that save lives. The year that we put guard cables on our major interstates right after Amendment 3 passed in 2004, the number of deaths declined in the state of Missouri, I believe, by over 200, and it stayed that way ever since. Those guard cables on the limited number of miles that we were able to put them on are saving lives every single day in the state of Missouri.
And that's something that this proposal specifically does, is put in more
absolutely
guard, more of those guard cables.
Absolutely of it.
The other talking point, Jewel, and a lot of the advertising, including that ad, is jobs. How is it that this creates jobs? Are you talking about road construction jobs?
Well, obviously, you can't repair and replace Missouri's infrastructure without hiring people to do so. So it would put people back to work building our roads and bridges. But the number one or number two decision that every small business makes, whether they're expanding or relocating to a community, is what's the local infrastructure. So there isn't a business decision that's made on a daily basis where the number one or number two decision is what's the quality of the roads and the infrastructure that I'm moving to. So if Missouri wants to be an economic leader, wants to create jobs, we're going to have a better infrastructure in our state, and we simply don't have it now.
Jeanette Oxford, one of the things we've heard just in the last couple of weeks is that this question for Kansas City voters might have special relevance because it will reduce the amount of tax impact of the proposed streetcar measure. We were talking about that in the first half of our program this morning. Is that your understanding of Amendment 7? Won't some of the benefit of this amendment be that it can support local infrastructure transit projects like streetcar in Kansas City?
A very small amount is being promised to some of the more mass transit kind of projects, a tiny amount. I've certainly been an advocate for our state dollars going to mass transit for a long time, but using the wrong mechanism to fund it so that people who have no discretionary income, who struggle every day to make it, have to pay a higher amount on almost everything that they pay is not the best way to fund this. It's important that we fund it the right way. I'd also say that the job situation, that making us ninth in the nation in the amount of sales and use tax that we have, might actually have a negative impact on the amount of jobs in Missouri, because right now we do have a much more competitive economic climate for Missouri businesses, and when we price us out by creating the largest tax increase in Missouri history, by making us ninth in the nation in sales tax, that may have an impact. Whereas there's only one of our border states that has a lower fuel tax than us, modernizing that so that we're equal in purchasing power is a much better way to do this. And the tiny amount of crumbs that are being promised to urban areas for mass transit kinds of projects or bike paths or, you know, other kinds of goods that I would like to see done is just to try to sweeten the pot to get some folks to vote yes on this thing when it really is crumbs when we're talking about the total amount of money that's being raised by this initiative.
816-235-2888 is the number to call with your questions for Jewel Paddock and Jeanette Oxford. Jeanette, another Jeanette, is calling in from Kansas City, Missouri. Jeanette, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What's your question for our guests?
Well, I have one question and then one comment. My question is to the, I've forgotten his name, the proponent of
Jewel
this,
Paddock.
Yeah, Mr. Paddock. My question is, who is financing this campaign? I live in Brookside, and just today I got two mailers, glossy mailers, to vote yes on this. There's a lot of money being spent on this, and they really want to push this through. All it says is Bill McKenna, treasurer. There's no one really saying who really wants this to go through. That's my question. But my comment is, I find it unconscionable, arrogant, and just so self-centered that they would expect people who are on limited income, who may not even own cars, may have to walk to the grocery store, to have to pay more for their gallon of milk, and don't even consider having a user tax for those that use the roads and bridges and things. You know, this is a larger proportion of their income, and for you to say there will not even be considered an increase in gas tax, I think is just the wrong approach. And then you have the Missouri legislature that's cutting cutting spending and taxes and things, their focus is in the, just in the wrong direction.
Jeanette, appreciate your call and your comments very much. Jewel Paddock, Jeanette's question was, who's bankrolling the campaign?
Well, let me begin by just setting the record straight. The price of a gallon of milk at the grocery store will not go up under Amendment 7. Food, medicine, prescription drugs, rent, utilities are all specifically exempt from this proposal. So to the extent that you are concerned about folks who have limited income or fixed income, those things that they have to do every single day to get by, including filling up their car full of gas to get to work or to health care, are all specifically exempted from this proposal. Whereas if you raise a fuel tax, the cost of every single consumer item will go up, either in the cost of transporting them to the place that you're purchasing or getting there to purchase them. So to the extent that you can create a system that's actually more fair, the sales tax is a much more fair proposal.
Her question about who's paying for the campaign.
Yeah, so we've been endorsed. You know, it's probably the broadest endorsement list.
But she's not asking about endorsement. No. Who's paying for the campaign?
Yeah, so small businesses from all across the state are supporting this effort from members of the Kansas City Chamber to the St. Joe Chamber to the Joplin Chamber. I mean, we have the endorsements of every major chamber of commerce. To the extent you think this is bad for small business, it's unusual that people who represent small business will be supporting it overwhelmingly.
Is the trucking industry a financial supporter? Just a second, Jeanette. Is the trucking industry a financial supporter?
I would not be surprised to find a trucking company on our list of supporters, but as a general rule, they're not a very large supporter of the measure.
Jeanette, I'm sorry. Jeanette Oxford, go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to say if you want to see who's financing it, go to the Missouri Ethics Commission website and put in the name of Mr. Paddock's organization, and you can read their financial statement, and you'll see that the people that make money from the construction jobs largely are the ones who are financing it, that some of them have given checks as large as, say, $160,000, and that more than $2 million has been put into the fund. That's why you're getting those glossy mailers and hearing lots of radio advertisements and television advertisements and seeing billboards, et cetera. The other side does have tons of money to spend on this, our side is doing its best to have a low-dollar grassroots campaign to let folks know that even if you don't pay more money on sales tax on milk, the fact that you've paid more sales tax on everything else does make it hard for you to buy milk. And we're talking about families that are really, really struggling.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. Scott is calling from Kansas City, Kansas, but is still interested in this issue. Scott, welcome to the program.
How you doing? I want to ask the guest a question about the proposal to make it three-lane all the way from here, from Kansas City to St. Louis. So I'm a truck driver, and I got a route every day where I go from Kansas City to St. Louis, and let me tell you, it is just a death trap waiting to happen. There's so much congestion on that highway from here to St. Louis that even in the rural areas, I mean, it's bumper to bumper quite a bit. And I know this has been debated a lot. There have been billboards on the highway. They ask you a question, want a third lane on I-70, vote yes for this amendment. Now, I'm a Kansas resident, and obviously I won't be able to vote in this election, but I do have an interest in this. And I do shop in Missouri from time to time for groceries, so I guess the sales tax would affect me in that respect. But I had the question, do you, any of the guests know about this three-lane proposal and how is this going to fund it?
Okay. Thanks, Scott. I've got to let our guests answer it here before we run out of time. Is widening I-70 to three lanes all the way across, is that part of this plan, Jewel Paddock?
That is one of the projects that have been approved and would be funded. And unfortunately, Missouri's Interstate 70, like many of our interstates, is over 50 years old. It's already in need of repair, and of course, adding another lane is just a measure to improve the safety and the quality. What will do if you're driving I-70, it'll keep the trucks on the right side of the road, and it'll leave two full lanes for the driving public, and that'll significantly enhance the quality and the safety of people driving that road every day.
Jeanette, how would you like to see those sorts of necessary repairs or improvements funded? Do you agree they're necessary? What would you like to see instead?
I think that a grid infrastructure is necessary. I think the cost of doing that I-70 project might be enough to wipe out all the rest of this wish list that's out there that people have. And that some more money will have to be, you know, found for some of these things that are being promised, because literally kind of like everything is being promised right now. in order to entice people to do it. And even if we build the best roads in the world, you know, most accidents are actually caused by poor driving decisions, especially by people who get impaired before they get behind the wheel. So we're not going to be able to save every single life by having better highways. And do I want us to have a good infrastructure? Yes, but it should be paid for through a fair source.
Jeanette Oxford is Executive Director of the Missouri Association for Social Welfare. Jewel Paddock is Deputy Treasurer for Missourians for Safe Transportation and New Jobs. We've been talking about Amendment 7. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You can find out more about Amendment 7 and about the Kansas City streetcar issue and all of our broadcasts as well. That's all at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. This show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Scott Ross, and Hannah Copeland. I'm Brian Ellison, and you are up to date.